A band breaks up, a lady runs from some ghouls, and some reporters have sex. It's the Little Treat Film Festival, and we'll explain what that means this week on The Number One Movie in America.
The Number One Movie in America.
Movie in America.
Movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
I'm Sean Collier. By the way, I'd like to acknowledge that lots of time we say week, even though we are a bi-weekly podcast.
That's fine.
Today on...
Right, yeah. This episode.
On this edition of...
You're smart people. You figured it out.
And I'm joined here by two vampires with more feelings than fangs. It's Camila Adams.
Do not doubt you are a killer.
And Robin Hitchcock.
Not kissing any boys.
Interview with the Vampire, 74 and two-thirds. Yes, I did take a minute. Here's a quick review of the movies Camila likes more than us.
Oh, this yay! Is,
as discussed, it is often the other way. It is more frequently the other way.
I am intrigued.
Robin and I are like, look, great, 76. And Camila's like 12. That's more frequent. The highest on the list was Pain and Gain.
The Rock.
You
gave an 87, Robin 39. I gave 50.
That movie has fully exited my brain.
I thought it was so funny.
I Am Legend, you also gave 87 to Robin's 44 and my 65.
Wow.
While You Were Sleeping. I don't remember you being the While You Were Sleeping lover in the room.
That makes sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, I
fuzzy rom-com.
I love
fizzy
Sandy.
Fizzy is what I meant,
yeah,
not fizzy. Fuzzy.
Yeah, fizzy, that's a good one.
Fuzzy. It hasn't gotten moldy.
86 to Robin's 55 and my 33. Glass, we both gave it a 38, you gave it a 68.
Surprised I gave it that high.
I'm surprised I was so low on While You Were Sleeping.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Next Friday, you went to 58. Okay. 15 and 20 over on the Caucasian couch over here. Hancock, 56 versus 36 and 30. Hangover Part 2. I'll just add these, which are the two where neither one of us got out of the single digits. Hangover Part 2, you gave a 54. Robin went 9 and I went 6. And Rob Zombie's Halloween, you went to a still humble 35. But over here, a 4 and an 8.
That's insane. So, I'm really surprised about the Rob Zombie's Halloween that I was more than you.
You found something to respect.
I have no idea what that was.
The beginning, the little boy's real creepy.
Yeah, I guess maybe that was the creep factor.
That little boy's also in Hancock.
But it's all over the place.
It is. I can't find a common denominator there.
No.
I mean, the only thing, Hangover, I'm Bradley Cooper is what I'm pretty sure what most of those points were for.
Which is fair.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I guess I Am Legend, I remember crying. So, I mean,
if
you pull an emotion, if you make me emote.
There are a lot of people who like that movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No pattern could be determined. I'll try this with Robin in 2 weeks.
Okay.
We have a lot to cover here, folks. Robin, tell the people what happened.
I like how whenever there's a complicated rules-based thing,
right,
you're
like,
you describe complicated rules-based improv games regularly.
Yeah. Yes, this is your thing.
All right, so... What happened here is that we play bingo every week with movie cliches, and all three of us got bingo at the same time, which has never happened before.
Unprecedented.
So we made up a rule on the spot, which is that we would do Little Treat Film Festival. Each one of us gave the others movies to watch that aren't on our Nomia list. They're just movies we like and want to talk about. And so that's what we are doing right now.
Hooray.
And as a reward for explaining that, pick the order, a reward or a punishment. What should we talk about first?
I think we should talk about The Five Heartbeats first.
Oh, okay.
Great. It's the one I watched yesterday, so it's most front of mind.
I think it's the one I have the most to say about, so I don't want to leave not enough time for it.
Gotcha.
So, if you didn't listen to the last episode, we all chose this very spontaneously.
Yeah.
We're people who know what movies we would show people if we had to show people a movie. And so this didn't require a lot of thought. Still, Camila, why was this your pick?
Well, let's see. It was one of the family favorites growing up. And this came out in 91. And I always find it enjoyable. I like the soundtrack a lot.
It's so
still.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Robert Townsend is one of my favorite, just like working people in general. Like, I don't want to like just specify director, but like every time he shows up in something or his name is in the credits, I'm like, yay, like he's my uncle or something. And if anybody can get me to Robert, that'd be awesome. But yeah, I mean, I always enjoyed it. And also it always kind of hit close to home. One, this is Black people homework. Like, this is like most Black people my age all know, and older, we all know this movie. We all quote this movie.
Yes.
If I were to say Big Red, if I were to say what are my office hours to some in a room full of Black folk, they would know what I'm talking about. And also because of the talent portion and the fact that it's, you know, this, it just grew up knowing like this R&B with the Temptations and all these those singing groups. And also my family produced talent contests for like 10 years.
Right.
And so I know like all this stuff is like very familiar to me, like the things that happen on stage and like at the audience and all that kind of stuff.
The guy diving into like the performance
shit like that. Yeah.
10 seconds in.
Right. And like, you know, watching like the women's reaction to like the dudes like trying to get these women to do, you know, to just react crazy.
Can
the
we talk for a second about Casey Lemons as Cookie?
I had no idea. All these years, never put the two and two together.
I had no idea it was her while it was going on. And then I was going to say that she outdid Desk Lady in Die Hard 2 as horniest performance in Nomia history.
Is she the one that faints?
Yes.
She's the one who like, writhing. Has an orgasm in her
chair.
She's
writhing.
Yes.
And then faints.
I love when he picks her up and kisses her and he faints immediately. He gives a look like, oh, look at that. This always happens.
Not another one.
So I looked her up and I was like, Casey Lemons!
That's amazing. I love it. I fucking love it.
Love it.
Just
too.
One more reason.
Well, and, you know, in the room, this movie was underseen because you were the only one who had seen it.
Because of Caucasian couch.
Because of Caucasian. I riffed that and boy, do I feel like it's going to stick.
Oh, yeah.
T-shirts.
But I think, I don't want to typecast the Caucasians not on the couch. I think this is just one that white people don't bother with.
Right.
You're fully right.
I went on Letterboxd, and it's got like 2,000 Letterboxd users have seen this movie.
Right. What?
Yeah.
Which is wildly low.
Yeah. And also like just like the unimaginative lists that it was on.
Yeah.
Like I was looking for that. And I don't even remember if we saw this, if my family saw this in the theater or
right.
if we rented it or, you know, I don't remember the origin of it, but yeah.
It's like baked in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, please. Like underlining that point, I was talking to my coworkers about Little Treat Film Festival,
mm-hmm.
and I mentioned that we were watching The Five Heartbeats, and Abby went, what is that? And Nia mm-hmm. went, yes!
Poor Hemplo.
So anyway, I loved this movie. I had such a good time with this movie. This is I had heard of it at some point and it had been on my list as like movie homework.
Right.
And I was so happy that you picked it. It's so good. It's so fun to watch.
Right?
Like there are things about it that I think could be better.
Yeah.
Like I haven't put it on my Letterboxd yet. I'm probably going to go with 4 stars.
Mm.
It's incredibly formulaic, but like it fucking nails the formula.
Yeah. And it reads like a VH1 Behind the Music.
Yes.
Basically, and which I'm not mad at.
No.
And my takeaway there was, isn't it nice when it's not a true story?
Like, yes.
I know it's, you know, I know everything in here has happened and it's kind of an
right.
amalgamation of
right.
many bands' experiences, but because it's not literally the story of Queen or NWA
right.
or
right.
whoever, we don't have to do this thing where we're like playing the greatest hits of what we know from that person's life and
right.
putting in all these little references and, oh, we have to have the scene where Elvis does this.
Right, right.
We can just do the stuff we want to do that makes for a good movie
yeah.
yes.
and leave the other stuff out.
Yes.
Yeah. Between that and That Thing You Do, it's like, why are those the only two of these I can really name offhand?
What's
yeah.
the Any of the Cruisers.
Okay.
The one with Diane Lane, also, which I can't think of right now.
Oh, Ricky and the Flash?
Oh, Ricky and the Flash is the one with Meryl Streep.
Is the one with Meryl Streep.
Similar vibes.
But anyway, yeah. It's fun when that happens.
Yeah, yes. You're right.
We're not, do you have a recap? Probably not 60 seconds because we're doing three of these.
Yeah, I don't know.
And abbreviated. Well, I'm not timing it.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens because I'm too close to this movie and it was hard.
Okay. Do what you got to do.
So we were like, we'll do it in 30. And Camila's like, we will be here for 14 minutes.
I have a lot to cover.
Scene by scene breakdown.
Anytime.
Yeah, okay. Go.
It's 1965 and singing group The Five Heartbeats are performing a local talent contest. They don't win, but Jimmy is in the audience, wants to manage them and turns them into a winning group. They don't win the next contest, but he gives them money, but they let him manage them anyway. Jimmy works hard to make them a polished group. A rival group tries to fix the next talent contest, but the Heartbeats are too good and don't leave a dry seat in the house. Jimmy arranges for them to record the first single, but the record company wants to give the song to some white guys, so they go with Shady Ass Big Red. On the road, they fight ego, sibling rivalry, drug abuse, racism, and corruption in the industry. They become a success. Cars, houses, magazine covers, more money, more problems. Ego and drugs get the better of Eddie. Big Red hangs a dude out the window for asking about his royalties. Tanya ignored Duck. Oh, God. Eddie and Red tried to take the Heartbeats from Jimmy, but Jimmy says no and Red has him killed. Red goes to jail. Eddie quits the group. Tanya cheats on Duck with his brother JT, so he quits. No one speaks for years. Years later, choir boy invites Duck to his church. Surprise, Eddie is clean and singing in the choir. Duck reunites with his brother and the rest of the group.
Ugh. I shed a little tear at that church scene. And oh, I was really nice. Like, when it first started, I was like, okay, this is kind of cheesy. And then I was like, never mind, I'm in.
I thought the emotional core is when the little duck shows up.
Oh,
like he still named the kid because that was the agreement.
Yes.
Oh.
That was 55 seconds, which is a miracle of coverage. It does get at maybe the only like structural issue I have here is. Too many things happen.
Yeah.
Yes.
There is so much plot packed in there that when Red goes to jail, which is arguably what the last hour has been building towards, we scan over a newspaper headline and that's the last we hear of Red.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's like we do a whole lot there with the Red and all that stuff. And some of that stuff does make for good cinema, to make good scenes, like him throwing him out the window or holding him out the window. But it's like, guys, I feel like we need a little bit more than the microfiche.
Yeah.
When did Suge Knight hang someone out of a window?
And was Vanilla Ice?
What?
I don't think it was Vanilla Ice, but it was Suge Knight.
And did he watch the Five Heartbeats and go like, taking notes?
I'm pretty sure.
Or were they alluding to a true story?
I'm pretty sure that happened after the fact.
Wait.
I kind of love that.
He was copying the movie?
I'm pretty sure.
I thought this was a...
Because like Death Row didn't exist until like... Well, I mean, maybe it was around the same time. It could have been the late 80s. Yeah. Because Tupac died in 93.
No, it was later because I lived in New Jersey.
Okay.
It is supposedly Vanilla Ice.
That makes it so much weirder.
Wow. Why was they? Why were they
also,
in the same room?
Why don't we know this?
Right. Yeah, right? It's like, why were they ever in the same room? That's what I want to know.
Vanilla Ice says it never happened.
Of course he does.
There was some connection between a label that Death Row was involved with and whoever was putting out the Vanilla Ice records.
Jeez.
So it probably was royalty related. But no, it was 1996. So if he did it, he thought, you know what seemed to work in the movie?
Well, I mean, it touches in the faxy, but apparently, supposedly, that happened to Jackie Wilson.
Oh.
Somebody did that to him.
So we're just in a cycle.
Yeah.
It happens. It's in a movie. Then it happens again. And then it'll be in another movie. I've seen other movies where people, it just.
Right.
LA Confidential.
Yeah. But you have facts. Give us facts as well.
Thank you. Okay. So released March 29th, 1991, ranking number 10 in the box office in the opening weekend. Not great, and they just kind of went down each week from there. The weekend gross was $1,630,000 with a $9 million budget.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not great. As Sean had mentioned before, it was based loosely on the Temptations and the Dells, two separate R&B.
Technical advisors, yes, the Dells.
Yes, the Dells were the technical advisors, and they are also singing for the Heartbeats in the movie.
Oh!
And they have some of the songs on the soundtrack as well.
Oh, that makes so much sense.
Sarge, our choreographer, with our feisty choreographer, is played by Harold Nichols of the Nichols Brothers, tap dancing fame and like the
oh my god, 30s, 40s, yes. Holy shit, the and people also, who flipped down the stairs.
Yes, and also he was married to Dorothy Dandridge.
Oh my god,
not a great marriage that they had from some podcasts I'd listened to a while ago about
yes,
Dorothy.
I vaguely recall from the made for HBO movie.
Right,
yes.
Yeah. So there's that, and yeah. Oh, and Leon who plays JT, Duck's brother, he went on to portray David Ruffin in The Temptations, which mm-hmm. was filmed here in Pittsburgh, mm-hmm. and based on the legendary Motown Quintet. They went through similar rise and fall that was depicted in this film. And also, a fun fact, when I came to visit Pittsburgh for the second time with my mom, we stumbled upon them filming some of The Temptations at either the Byam or the Heinz Hall. I don't remember which one, but we just kind of like randomly went in there, and like one of the performances on stage that they were doing in the movie, like we were sitting in
That's
the back
so
of the audience.
Cool. Mm-hmm. Okay, I have a slight theory, which I want to, not about the film, about Little Treat Film Festival. Okay. When Sean suggested that we all do our own faxy segment, mm-hmm. I thought he was like, I want you to see how much work goes into this.
Oh, no. I just didn't want to do it three times.
Yes, that's fair. Yeah. But like, it is hard. It did, yeah. Like, it did give me appreciation for the work you put into that. Because
absolutely.
I know that some of our movies have more readily available fax.
Right.
Yeah.
But I really struggled with it.
Me
which
too.
We'll get to.
I know we had like all these movies to cover. I didn't want to do too much. I didn't want to do too little. I wanted to make sure it was accurate and blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah. And also, there is a couple years ago, Robert Townsend released a Making of the Five Heartbeats DVD. Ooh. It's amazing just to watch, because he's got all this, you know, footage that he already had and all that stuff together. And they talked to a lot of the cast members today and all that business. And I have an autographed copy.
That's awesome.
Which makes my heart sing.
I'm trying to manifest for you writing a Robert Townsend profile.
Oh, thank you.
I'm trying to manifest this becoming a musical. I was expecting that you would get to that, because mm-hmm. so often I end the faxy segment with, yeah, there's a musical, because it right. happens so much. And what are you waiting? The songs are already written.
Right.
Yeah.
It basically has the same structure as Jersey Boys and a million other jukebox
and
musicals.
Dream Girls.
Yeah.
So the people who do these things, I was about to say Broadway, like you say Hollywood, when Broadway
is a thing, I think that's fair.
Wringing their hands to turn anything to do Mrs. Doubtfire the musical right. and Back to the Future the musical. This wouldn't be expensive to stage.
No.
It needs to look like a talent competition and can pretty much stay there the whole show.
Yeah.
Maybe because, as discussed, this is not as seen as it should be. Yeah. Maybe they don't think the name recognition, but it feels like it's begging for it.
Like
and it would be great.
Be. Yeah, especially like when you see the scene with him and his little sister. Like mm-hmm. sing, like that's just like, it's right there, man.
His
like,
little sister, what is going on with that tiny girl and her enormous pipes? It is incredible.
That's what I should have looked up, like what's she doing now?
I looked up her IMDb and she doesn't have a ton of credits, but I assume she's gone on to stage work or something. One thing that I found notable is the Patti LaBelle version of that song over the credits. They still brought her in.
Right?
Patti LaBelle could not belt enough. They had to bring in this little girl.
That scene is so good, and yet, two things. Why didn't you just put her in the band?
Yeah.
Right. We never see her again, like maybe in a group later.
Yeah.
It's like, does she not want credit?
Right, they should have done what they did with Selena.
Right. Two, dude, write some of this down. I know it's a movie, right. and we're kind of doing the thing, but like, she's on like verse three, and you're just, and when he gets done, he's like, I guess I'll sweep for her. Like, go write, get a pen.
Yes.
That was good.
Focus. This is your hit.
No, that was absolutely one of the highlights, the musical highlights of the film. But it maybe can feel a little soap opera at times. It's especially, again, speaking of how much was packed into it, I knew that there was maybe, you know, 20, 25 minutes left and we were introducing the cheating plot. I'm like,
that's fair.
How is this going to resolve and get us back to the beach where we were at the beginning? That said, some of those elements just make it way easier to be compelling, and if this were ever on TV, it would be really easy to jump in on TV because something interesting and twisty and emotionally grabbing is happening every 4 minutes.
Yeah, I think it was a little bit too much, but maybe that was like they needed to get like, why would he never speak to his brother. Like, why would he like separate from his brother, and why would he stop this? Why would he break the group up? That had to be the reason. And I'm still like mad at him for even giving her the time of day. Like, this broad, like, she gave you no play when you before the fame, and now all of a sudden
comes
like,
in with stars in her eyes.
Oh, remember me?
Yes. And, which good acting on the part of that actor. Like, she really did like sell that.
Right.
Yes.
And also like the woman that choir boy picks up at the party, and when she reacts to him, that, oh my God, I didn't recognize you. Like, I thought that was like spot on.
The way that he like tries really hard to explain who he is.
I love how his transformation, like going from like the scaredy cat, little choir boy, church mouse type, and to now I'm like, wow, girl, you know who I am.
Like, I really like that actor too. And I don't know what else he has done.
I've seen him on random things here and there. Yeah. I don't know if I've seen him in like a full on movie. And like Dresser, the
fifth one.
Yeah, the one who was like, man, I do the choreography.
Oh, that one.
Yeah,
yes.
Like, he's gone on to do like a lot of stuff. I think he was like on the blacklist for like several seasons.
Really?
Yeah, he was like one of the bosses. I don't know. But yeah, he does a lot of guy in chair.
Yes.
FBI.
Colin and I watched several seasons of The Blacklist. That was like our, what are we going to watch? I guess watch The Blacklist. And it got too weird.
Yeah. We were watching it for like several seasons too. And I was like, I'm done.
Yeah, this is too complicated.
And then every year be like, I'm like, it's still on? Yeah.
It's still on. It's literally still on. What are we doing? Oh, Harry Lennox is who we're talking about. Yes. Okay. Right. Yes. I remember. He was also on Dollhouse.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I know we have to move on, but the specific thing I loved was by the time we finish the opening credits, we have introduced every character, the whole world of the movie, and had a great time.
Yeah.
This movie is so good at direct storytelling with Red, too.
Mm. Yeah.
8 seconds after Red walks in, you know exactly who he is.
He's so smarmy.
Exactly what he's about.
He is so cartoonishly evil.
Like, what is this trail? Oh, and we cannot forget Diane Carroll. Like,
oh, first of all, how is she still so fucking beautiful?
Oh,
like, she looks
my God.
Like she's 25.
Right? And her, like, big moment at her husband's funeral where Red comes up to her and she just slaps the shit out of him. Like, I love that scene.
I love her so much. I also wanted to shout out the costumes. Mm. Ruth Carter.
Yes.
Anybody,
oh, was it Ruth Carter?
It's Ruth Carter. Yes. And anybody who is trying to create a tableau for a wedding, I am currently involved in this process. The costumes that they wear are so consistently, they're wearing 5 different shades of green and they go together perfectly. Watch this movie if you're trying to get your bridesmaids tableau together.
Nice.
That's my advice.
Robin, how many points would you give it?
88.
Right. I'm going to do 80.
Right on. 90.
I accidentally wrote 900, and that feels accurate, too.
For its flaws, I absolutely... this was a joy to watch.
86. Very, very good score. Thank you.
You're welcome.
For bringing us this little treat. The Five Heartbeats was released on March 29th, 1991. What was the number one song in America? No one's going to get it.
Oh, I thought... Okay. I already know because I looked it up.
because you thought you were going to
Yeah, I thought we were going to, yeah.
Okay,
oh, you
said no one's going to know, so I'm
going to
be like, what are some of the obscure 90s number one hits I know of? Like The Kissing Game?
No.
Okay, I'm done. What is it?
One More Try by Timmy T.
Yeah, I was never going to get there.
Dude, we've got like separate, where do you find your stuff?
I get it on Wikipedia. It's sometimes tricky because you're trying to figure out the movie release day versus the day they declare what a number one movie is.
The one I have was Coming Out of the Dark by Gloria Estefan, which
that's
better. I have no
better.
Idea what it is.
Oh, I listened to
I at least know who Gloria Estefan is.
Yeah, right.
It's one of the worst number one hits I've ever heard.
This
maybe
song?
The worst. Timmy T with One More Try.
I'm gonna have to listen to it.
You know, it's a mediocre mid-tempo adult contemporary ballad if everything went wrong.
One more try. I didn't know how much I loved
people
you.
Have said before, like, why don't you mix in the song at the end? And I'm like, oh, because that's how they get you.
Right.
But I might
don't
do
think
it for this.
I don't think they get it. You know how you avoid it? You put it under us. That's
right,
way more work for you, but you can.
No.
It's basically
placement.
No more work than for me.
Placement.
Camila, who's going next?
Robin, because I really want to get into this. this movie.
Well, okay. So I picked Between the Lines from 1977. Do you have the date handy? Because I, so also audience, I left my phone on my counter. And so I am, as Sean quite vulgarly said, raw dogging the episode.
We were all thinking it. April.
I was literally thinking it.
April 27th, 1977.
Okay. And it made $0. Like this movie. I did look it up and it was like the whole run of this movie was like a few hundred thousand. So you know, this was the 70s and like it didn't get released everywhere.
How did you find it?
The film critic Jordan Searles recommended it and I trust her. And I really like Joan Micklyn Silver. The movies of hers that I have seen in addition to this one are Hester Street, which I watched for Oscar quest reasons because Carol Kane was nominated for Best Actress. I don't recommend it for people who aren't nerds, but I enjoyed it very much. It's about a Orthodox Jewish woman who immigrates to the US and decides maybe she doesn't want to be an Orthodox Jewish woman anymore. Huh. It's great. And then also Crossing Delancey, which is the Pickle Man rom-com, if anybody has seen that one. Another delightful film. So I was on board with this immediately once I pegged it, as I said last week, as Empire Records at an alt weekly.
Yes.
It's a little less goofy than Empire Records. Like it takes itself more seriously. Mm-hmm. But my 60-second or less summary.
Yes.
Okay. So basically, the Back Bay Main Line is an alt weekly in the Boston area. And this follows the people who work there, including Lindsay Krause as a well-meaning photographer and some redhead lady who has a job I don't know, but is basically dealing with men's bullshit. And then the bullshit men, including John Hurt, who's the worst person who's ever been on film. some other guy the guy from Seventh Heaven who is selling a book and that's making him an asshole. And Jeff Goldblum, and full Jeff Goldblum as the music critic.
and a fully formed proto.
It's really
like he's a tiny, tiny baby and yet he is all Jeff Goldblum all the time.
It reminds me of Jack Black in High Fidelity. Where it's like, hello, everyone, here I am.
Yeah.
This is what I have to offer.
Yeah. I'm picking it up, man. Like, I'm sorry. Are we interrupt you?
No. I think I'm done. That's okay. It. Yeah. I'm just sort of, because
partners are traded.
Right. People sleep around. Ultimately, the paper gets sold.
Yeah. So, my biggest thing once Jeff Goldblum came on screen was that his attractiveness has just been like hills and valleys.
Yeah.
For like, because like, you know,
you're so right.
Seeing like his childhood photos and stuff, it's like, that was a rough time, friend. And then I see him here and it's like, well, damn, hi, how you doing? Yep. Like looking great. I'm picking up everything you're laying down. Mm-hmm. The Fly, ooh.
Mm-hmm. He's hot in The Fly until.
No, not even. Like, okay. I feel like, I don't know what it is. Yeah, but, and then we get to Jurassic Park and it's like, whoa, all right. And then from then on, he's like gone into full bloomness. He is completely gold bloomed.
Did you catch the hometown nod?
To Pittsburgh?
Mm-hmm.
I missed it.
Oh, he's answering the phone and he keeps riffing Back Bay Mainline. Like, he keeps changing that slightly and like riffing different. And the last one he says is Monongahela Backwash.
Oh. Nice.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And also shout out Joe Morton.
Joe Morton in like two scenes. That was his screen debut.
Really?
It was on my facts list.
Nice.
I also learned, speaking of Jeff Goldblum, you know, going through, how does Sean do this? I was like, well, I know he looks at Wikipedia. Wikipedia mostly talks about how this movie made no money, but was influential. And then I went to IMDb trivia, which I know is nonsense, really. Yeah.
There's lots of information there. It could be made up, but, but it isn't for all we know.
So it said the cast features three Academy Award nominees, Lindsay Krause, Michael J. Pollard, and Jeff Goldblum. And I was like, and then I was like, wait a second. Maybe he did one of those weird, I directed a short film things.
Yeah.
And he did.
Really?
He was nominated for an Oscar for directing a short film in the 90s.
Huh.
Get out.
Yes, called Little Surprises.
Wow.
When I saw him in this.
Little Surprises.
When I saw him in this, I just thought of how weird it is that sometimes he becomes a palatable mainstream movie star. Because he's so weird.
Yeah.
And so horny. And so brainy.
Yes.
That when it's like, oh, we're going to put him in an action movie because it's that recognizable star Jeff Goldblum, or we're going to give him a Disney Plus launch day series.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, this guy's a fucking weirdo, right?
I wonder what it is. Yeah. What happened? Like, what exactly was it that shot him to superstardom? Like, what How do you go from The Fly to Jurassic Park?
I mean, The Fly was a big hit.
Was it?
I think.
I mean, I know it's on our list, but are a lot of things.
Yeah.
I love that scene where he is giving a talk and he's saying the most nonsensical gibberish.
He's saying
nothing. All the girls more or less have "love you" written on their eyelids.
Doing
and
Raiders
then
of the Lost
gives away his phone number and ends his talk.
But listen, why was I trying to memorize the number when he said it?
I know why.
That's how convincing that shit was.
So I don't know how to engage, because as I tweeted and letterboxed, this hits too close to home.
Yeah,
Robin.
I didn't really think about that part.
No, it's fine. Just these negotiations of how many pages can you put editorial on because we sold this many and maybe it's going to be sold and maybe if the thing might be sold to the opposing counsel from My Cousin Vinny / the opposing coach from the Mighty Ducks.
And Perry White on the 90s Superman show.
Right.
So it was funny to me that he was buying a newspaper. Smith is the actor.
Smith is his name. I always forget his name. This is all very relatable content. And the interesting thing about that is it was almost not refreshing, but kind of like illuminating to go, oh, so 45 years ago, exact same situation. Mm-hmm. I guess we haven't decayed too much.
Right.
Yeah.
But at the same time, that whole world is almost gone.
Yeah.
I mean, there are almost no alt weeklies. There's not even a Village Voice anymore. And the things they're talking about, everything they're fighting for would be an unimaginable luxury today. You know, I read this incredible, almost book length magazine article that Joe Bob Briggs did for Texas Monthly in the late 80s about the black market for stolen art, which involved him being flown with a couple other people to Italy.
And investigative reporting.
Adopting a false persona and escaping via a purchased car through Turkey and trying to get out. And I'm like, I have trouble getting like an overnight at a bed and breakfast to write about.
Getting my lunch reimbursed. Yeah.
So all of which is to say this hit home. But for that, I did think that it's really relatable, you know, in kind of that general, like, we're young people and we have struggles and we kind of want to sell out, but we kind of want to succeed and we don't know and we don't know where our life's going, but we're just going to keep them wheels turning and see what happens.
Yeah. The thing that really stuck out to me on this rewatch and maybe the core of why I like this movie so much is how deftly it handles the pitfalls of the male ego.
Yeah.
The scene where John Hurt and Lindsay Krause go to see Mary Lou Henner as a stripper, and Lindsay Krause is doing an excellent job interviewing her, but she's there as the photographer, and John Hurt is there as the reporter, and he pulls her away, and he's like, fuck you, do your job, not my job. And she doesn't say then, but then says later, like, if I just let you do your job, you would have no story because you sucked at what you were doing, and because I butted in, we're going to have a great story. I have lived that so many times of like, I had to do your job for you. And the way that he breaks down when the other shitty white guy gets his book deal, the way the shitty white guy with the book deal starts completely ignoring his girl, leading her to go into bed with John Hurd, which I'm like, wrong direction. And then it's heartbreaking when she stays with him, but also
but
feels
very real.
It felt real in the same way that it got sold and John Hurd got fired. Felt real. Yes. It was incredibly real.
This movie kind of felt like an actor's exercise.
How so?
Like I could see any chunk of this, like take 2-3 pages of the script and give it to like an acting class. And let them go nuts. And you know, like that's what it felt like to me.
Yes. Well, it's a collection of characters.
Yeah. I mean, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but that's just kind of like what came to mind.
Yeah. There's no real plot to be found here, which is not for everyone.
But it's like similar to like Empire Records.
Yeah.
And it just took a minute for me to catch on to that. It's like, okay, so there's really not a plot necessarily. Yes. This is just a day in the life of kind of thing. And the collection of characters was interesting to me, but I cannot lie and say that Jeff Goldblum, Joe Morton.
I don't think I would have picked this if Jeff Goldblum weren't in it. Like, I want everyone to watch this movie. I think it's great, but I was like, I have a hook for Camille.
And it's also like, it was crazy to me. Like, I really, really hated guy with the glasses and the bow tie.
Oh, the advertising
from,
guy.
Yeah, from like Jump
Stanley.
Street.
Yeah, he's
like
the worst.
Way, right, from the way that he's like basically like verbally assaulting. The, yeah. And I guess, you know, I at some point had physically assaulted this woman. And oh my God, like, yeah, the amount of gaslighting that goes on in this office. And also that kind of connects a little bit, I felt, to Sean's movie as well.
Yes.
Well, yes.
Also, just because I love everything in this movie, I want to make sure we acknowledge all of it. Bruno Kirby as the one guy really trying to do investigative reporting and getting beat up for it. A tiny, shrimpy Bruno Kirby. Adorable. And also the weird performance art scene.
Oh, I was about to bring that up. That was so good.
I actually love that.
It's so funny, and it's such a good fuck you to that kind of artiste.
Right.
Of like, because I did this thing with thought and intention, it's art. It's like, no, I'll just smash some shit and say some words too.
And they got their coffee machine out of there with it.
Mm-hmm.
When he's like Stanley exposed or whatever, like that was my favorite.
Because Stanley deserves it.
Right. And you can see that like Jeff's trying to keep it together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Also, that's the actor who plays the performance artist. He's been in a million things, but the thing he will stick out for me is in Walk Hard. He says, "Wrong kid died." He's Dewey Cox's dad in Walk Hard.
I also really like the guy that sells the paper and sleeps under the pinball machine.
That's Michael J. Pollard, Academy Award nominee for Bonnie and Clyde.
How about that? Yep. All I could criticize is like, I don't feel like I'm going to remember this very well. Mm. I will remember the mood.
Yes.
I will remember certain scenes. You know, in 3 years, I won't be able to go more than, yeah, it's about a newspaper. None of them are happy.
Yeah.
A lot of drinking.
I watched this probably for the first time around 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And I, going in, couldn't have told you individual scenes other than the strip club scene.
Mm-hmm. Well, they all kind of like blend together because it's just a series of them interacting.
Yeah.
Party, work, you know, bar, blah, blah.
It's also like sad comedy. And we don't get a lot of sad comedy.
Yes.
I gotta say though, like, I mean, it really hurt that the Seventh Heaven guy was in it.
Because he's a creep?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that really just like.
Who's the
dad from Seventh Heaven who's a pedophile?
Yeah. He got into sex kids trouble. I can't remember what kind, but he's a creep.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah.
A shame for the legacy of this film.
And for those kids.
Well, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
But honestly, it helps that he's a piece of shit in the movie.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And also shout out to, and if anybody likes, you know, these, like, this is so random, but on Instagram, and I guess he's on TikTok, Handsome Rob, I believe his name. He's a very funny dude who's like doing these like 30-second recaps. He's rewatching Seventh Heaven and does
these
like 30-second video recaps of each episode. And every time he gets a little jab into the preacher, it's hilarious.
My mom liked that show, so I have seen an unusual amount of it for how terrible it is.
Yeah, I've never watched it.
It's not good.
I am very glad I never had to be anything journalism adjacent before computers. That seems...
Yes! I have one interesting fact from my fact-finding mission, which is, according to the film critic of the Austin Chronicle 20 years ago, the Austin Chronicle, their alt-weekly, came into existence because of this movie.
Oh, wow.
Really?
Yes.
So wait, you are of an age of, like, literally you've never had to cut and paste and glue and, you know, and... put that
right. Only as a romp, because like by the early 2000s, you know, that's when people were making zines and would do that to look cool.
Right.
But I mean, I never, you know, I never had to
live through it.
Yeah.
Did it for my grade school paper.
No, I did it at high school. I was on newspaper in my high school and also yearbook. We did similar stuff to like that. And also like we had like a neighborhood newspaper.
Adorable.
And we would do that.
I don't know if we've talked about how when I was a kid, I wanted to be a reporter. That was like because of Lois Lane, basically. I was like, I want to be a and also His Girl Friday.
What saved you?
Not being very good at English language stuff.
Well, you need that.
I'm actually a pretty good writer, but not by teacher's standards.
You know what I'm jealous of? In spite of the, you mean I would have to go places and write down with a pencil and then say those words to a person later? No, I'm not doing that. You know what's nice? It's like we put out one of these a week. What happens in between? We work on the stuff for the next week because there's not an internet to demand that we do constant additional work.
Yes.
Right.
That's nice. Yeah. Anyway, this is just my life. Camila, how many points do you give this movie?
54.
I would go, again, it's hard because it's so close to home, but that's kind of a positive and a negative for a score. So about a 75.
And I'm going to go 84.
That is a 71. So we like these movies that we like, but we like Five Heartbeats more. And I really have no idea where this is going to go.
I also don't know where this is going to go. I don't have a number in mind for our next film.
I chose Carnival of Souls. I saw this for the first time, I think, in 2020.
Oh, wait, are we going to do the top song in whatever it was, 1977?
Yeah.
Also, speaking of, let's also shout out to the jamming scene in that movie.
What band is in this?
Oh, Southside Johnny and the Asbury Jukes.
Yeah, they're great.
I'm sorry. Thank you so much.
I don't mean that band. I met Jeff and Joe Morton and creepy preacher guy. We're having the jam session.
Okay. I am glad you shouted that out because that is great. But I'm also glad we're going to talk about Southside Johnny, because when I inherited my dad's record collection, he had a bunch of Southside Johnny records, including a bootleg. And I love that band.
They're great.
Love that band. And I remember when I saw this, I was like blown away, like that they are the music. You know, I was like, how do I not know this movie exists?
Huh. And
they're still pretty around.
Are they? Good
I think
for them.
So. All of those, Jersey Shore acts just are like 84 and still muscled. And
they're like, fuck yeah.
Yeah.
Still touring.
It's all those tomatoes.
Between the Lines was released on April 27th, 1977. What was the number one song in America then?
Donna Summer.
That was also going to be my guess.
No.
Eagles.
I don't know if I know this song.
Okay.
Oh.
Do you know the band or artist?
I don't think I know the artist.
No.
But I might, in a minute, I might be like, I'm sorry, I didn't realize that was them.
Yeah. Earth, Wind, and Fire?
No, it's a solo. It's a solo lady.
I don't know.
Linda Ronstadt.
We're not going to get there.
Yeah.
It's Thelma Houston.
Oh, who did Don't Leave Me This Way?
It is Don't Leave Me This
Way.
Okay,
you know that song.
Do I?
Yes.
Is it from a thing?
It's from American culture.
Okay. Is it fast?
No, it is eventually, but it starts out slow. Don't leave me this way. And then the beat drops. Baby, my heart is full of love and desire for you. I don't like singing.
Okay.
That sounds great. Why did I listen to Timmy T instead of Thelma Houston?
You will recognize that song.
Okay.
It's a banger.
I believe you.
You know where you might have heard Don't Leave Me This Way is Can't Hardly Wait.
Could be.
Okay.
So, Carnival of Souls was my pick. I watched this for the first time in 2020, probably during lockdown.
Yeah.
So that might, it went well.
Right.
You know, this what is reality? Occasionally, it just I feels like I'm wandering around and for no point and no one can see me or hear me. But I was blown away by how much it has vibes that I didn't think came into existence until David Lynch invented them.
Colin asked me, why do you think Sean picked this movie? And I'm like, because he knows that David Lynch watched it.
Yeah. Yeah. Feels a lot like that.
It's funny because I felt like Alfred Hitchcock watched it.
I think that it watched Alfred Hitchcock.
Yeah. I think this is more.
This is before Psycho.
It's after Psycho.
It's after Psycho.
And I kept thinking, is this making me think about Psycho just because it's in black and white and a lady keeps looking in a suitcase?
This is 62?
Yeah. Psycho's 60.
Oh, that's right.
You know, it probably is a post-Psycho movie. I mean, there were a million, you know, black and white thrillers. But in addition to, I love a head trip horror movie that doesn't end up making any sense, and I love those vibes, I really like little plucky films that came out of nowhere, and this is one of those. So,
also, that lady is super your type. That fake Elizabeth Debicki Grace Kelly lady.
That's funny, okay.
Sure. She reminded me of Mary Beth.
Yep.
A little bit.
Yep. Totally Sean's type.
I can be typecast. Candace Hillegass, who kind of had a career. She was like a Strasberg-trained actor.
Okay.
And just signed on to do this weird thing. And it eventually became the thing she was best known for. But I'm eager to hear.
Well, do you want to give us a recap of the plot?
I'll tell you. What happened? It's not going to take long. Mary and some friends are drag racing some greaser doofuses when their car runs off a bridge. Hours later, Mary emerges from the river with no memory of the accident or its aftermath. She goes to Utah to be an organist, but she's stalked by one or more staring ghouls and mysteriously drawn to an abandoned dance hall. I have 60 seconds. It's fine. drawn to an abandoned dance hall on Salt Lake. After getting fired for playing the devil's music and being so weird that even her neighbor, Pervy McDrunkass, is fed up with her, she heads out to the landmark to discover her fate. I'll give facts, but I'm dying to know initial thoughts. Robin looked at Camila in terror.
It took me, and you know what? And I made a point to pay attention.
Thank
for
you.
For both of your films, I quickly knew
I had to put my phone away during Carnival of Souls.
Yeah.
My phone never wanted to come out during Five Hour
Right.
But Carnival of Souls, I was like, I need to watch this with discipline or it's not going to happen.
Right. Yeah.
It's only 78 minutes. Sure. That's a big ask.
Right. But there's like a lot emotionally going on in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
From what I gathered when I got to the end was that, okay, so she was dead all along. Mm-hmm. She never really actually got out of that lake. But there was also just like so much gaslighting. Like, so the dudes were really pissing me off in this
that
movie.
That guy is a nightmare. He makes John Hurt in Between the Lines seem like a normal dude who you should hang out with.
Right. But I also was like, you know what? Bet, I appreciate, what was the woman's name?
Mary, I think.
What was, I appreciate Mary's stance on like things of like, you know what? I like my own company, but today I don't want to be alone. Like that kind of thing. Like I was like, you know, I can totally relate to this kind of shit. But it was very interesting. I can't say if I liked it or didn't like it.
That's why I don't have a number written down.
Yeah.
My interpretation, by the way, was more that she was flipping between realities, one where she was dead all along and one where she wasn't, because of those scenes where the sound drops out and no one acknowledges her. I was like, oh, she's back in the reality where she died.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really care. I don't think it really matters. It's a vibes-based movie.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the thing that, like, all SEO requires all movie sites to say, blank movie ending explained.
Right.
I don't need that for this.
No, I don't.
Or really, honestly, almost any movie.
Mm-hmm. But I appreciate that it's such a thinker.
Yes.
Like, that's what I do. Like, because I mean, I was thinking about it for a while afterwards. Like, what does it all mean? And I also feel like, and this might, I don't know if this will be an insult to you, but I think it'd be like a great movie to just project and play during a party or like underneath.
I have it a bar.
Like underneath like this hype ass music. Like that's.
You're so right.
Though I do love a constant spooky organ score. But yes.
Yeah.
Put something different on top of it.
Also, I'm sorry. There's just so much like little things like the fact like who. Is that a thing? You go to school to be an organist and just decide, you know what? I'm not really religious, but.
I mean, what else? You can work at a ballpark.
What I want to do is I'm going to play. I'm going to go to school and study to play the organ.
There's only so many organs out there.
Yeah. Particularly, it's a big, fancy organ.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm trained on this thing, and there's seven of them. I guess I work at the church now.
Well, a friend of mine dated a guy who sang at a church professionally, and like the first night they spent together, he was like, all right, got to go to church. And she was like, oh, you do church? And he was like, just professionally.
Am I waiting to hear your general?
My general thoughts are, what? And also, like, I have to say, I was really fixated on you picking this and like because Colin kept being like, why did he pick this? I was like, the vibes are clear, like it makes sense to me, but then I was thinking about you picking this versus what me and Camila picked. Where I was like, Camila picked an iconic black cinema movie to share with her white friends on a Caucasian couch. I picked an unseen gem from a female director, and you were like, weird. I'm gonna go weird.
It often boils down to like, what's a movie that I love that I know there's no reason people who I like are going to have to get to this otherwise.
Yes.
I mean, it pops up places. It's a Criterion movie.
Really?
It's Criterion spine number is under 100.
Oh my gosh.
It's a very early Criterion movie. Ends up in a lot of things because it's, well, here are some facts.
Okay,
and then I'll talk more about that. This was made, I mentioned in the last episode, by a director named Herc Harvey, who was a working director of stuff. He did industrial films. He did educational films. He did like travelogue series for PBS and that kind of thing. There was a huge studio for these called Centron in Lawrence, Kansas, where this movie begins. It just had...
Oh, that's where my father-in-law is from.
Ah.
Yeah.
Maybe he worked on a film set.
I doubt it.
At some point. But he felt like that he had the chops and they had the resources to do a feature. And he came up with this story after driving by the building near Salt Lake. I'll get to that in a minute. You've seen him. He plays the ghoul. The main ghoul that's all around is the director.
He does a good job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Filmed on location in Lawrence and in Salt Lake City for a budget of $33,000.
What is going on with that building?
Let's skip ahead to the building.
Okay.
$33,000 is less than $350,000.
I assume that was in Salt
today.
Lake and it was over a Salt Lake, and that's why it looks like that.
The pavilion is a real place. It's called Saltaire. It was originally built in 1893 on Salt Lake.
Right.
And it was kind of a western Coney Island. At one point, it was considered the most popular vacation destination in the country.
I would go there.
just kind of like a carnival, like dance hall, you know. Hmm. Event space.
On stilts over a lake.
On stilts over Salt Lake. Destroyed by a fire the first time in 1925. Rebuilt in the same location. When it was rebuilt, it had the largest dance floor in the world.
Wow.
And they had all of these big band concerts, like Glenn Miller type big band concerts constantly. In the following decades, couple of problems. One, the lake receded.
Yes.
Yeah.
So now it's on stilts over some dirt near the lake, and like they even built in a little railroad to take you from the place where there was stuff to the water. Also, it caught on fire several more times.
Damn.
It started to fade in popularity. That's when this was filmed.
It
wasn't really being used for anything at that time.
So it wasn't a thing where people saw this movie and were like, ah, yes, that thing from Salt Lake.
Well, no one saw this movie at the time, but if they had, it would have been recognizable.
Okay.
It would have been like the Poconos resorts are to us now. Like a thing
that what a Poconos resort looks like.
But like people people with long memories would remember this place.
Good.
A third version was built in 1981, only occasionally saw any success. It has been more or less abandoned since the late 90s.
Shame.
If you go there right now, it's sitting there.
It's probably still there.
Probably even creepier than it appears here. He did fail to put a copyright on the US prints, so the film was in the public domain the moment it premiered.
Wow.
Okay, wait a second. Hang on. I went to law school. Copyright arises automatically. It's not like a trademark.
Because this is what went wrong with Night of the Living Dead. When Night of the Living Dead was printed and filmed, it was called Night of the something, different title.
Okay.
They changed it to Night of the Living Dead at the last minute, changing out the logo on the first thing. The original logo had a copyright. The one they replaced it with, they forgot to put the copyright on.
Ooh.
It went into the public domain.
I need to do more research.
I always wondered why that was always in public domain.
Yeah, it's some weird case with film rights. And it was sort of barely released at the time. They had a big premiere there. It was released as the back half of a double feature with a movie called The Devil's Messenger. It didn't really do any business. It got a cult following over like 25 years.
Yeah.
Because it would be a late night TV movie because it was free.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as home video happened, it started being cranked out everywhere because it was free. And it was really until the late 1980s that like it was reevaluated. There was a big festival revival in 1989 where they got the director and the cast, and they had no idea that anybody liked this movie. And since then, it has started to pop up on best horror films lists. It's 32 on Slant's list, 39 on Complex Magazine's list, 85th on Paste's list.
So here's the thing. I did enjoy watching this movie, and I do think it's interesting, but that's where I'm getting confused, where you want me to transfer over into it's good.
I think it's great.
Okay. The main performance is very good.
Yeah.
The last act, I love the descent into nonsense, right? That all works for me. Most of the scenes before that are so stilted and weird that I could barely enjoy them.
Stilted and weird.
Like,
how?
It felt like the acting was like community theater level.
I mean, that's what I agree that, but I also feel like that's what you're going to get.
Maybe that's my problem, is that I needed to you think about Night of the Living Dead, there are a few clunky performers in there, but like most of them
are really good,
right? And like, as much as I hate that neighbor guy, I feel like he was one of the only people who could read dialogue and sound like a human. Like, the woman who owns the boarding house, like,
she was bad.
She
sounds like a machine reading her lines. Even like when the guy at the gas station talks to her, reminded me of we need a better actor.
I once knew a girl who lived on Gordon Street, but that was a long time ago when I was young.
Do we have to put up with this? I mean, Can't we get a better actor? I know it's a small part, but I think we can do better than this.
For my, you know, I need to reference Wayne's World 2 as often as possible.
I guess when you watch as much low-budget old horror as I do,
yes,
you your concern for that just erodes to nothing.
That makes a lot of sense.
Because I watch so much like Hammer stuff from that era where it's, yes, like, they're all kind of bad. But a lot of those scenes, there is some stilted and weird to it. But for me, that just works with her being in this stilted, weird, confusing reality.
Right, I thought about that too. At one point, I'm like, is this on purpose? Like the beginning of Mulholland Drive, right? Yeah. And like, maybe? Or is the beginning of Mulholland Drive like that because of this? Has David Lynch talked about how many times he watched this movie? Because the answer is 7,000.
I don't think he's gone to this and cited it a lot, but I think it is an acknowledged influence.
Okay.
Yeah.
If you like David Lynch, you should watch this movie.
Yes.
It's free everywhere.
It's free everywhere.
Yeah, that's the other thing. Like, I'm never really... this is absolutely the same vibe that a David Lynch movie would put me in, mm-hmm, because I walk away from most of them like, I don't know what just happened.
Yeah.
I don't, mm-hmm, know if I liked it. I don't know if I did.
Yes!
But, like, in the same vein of, you know, the clunky performances and whatnot, and, you know, you said that you watch so much, like, low-budget horror. I have seen so many fucking indie, like, homemade DIY movies, mm-hmm, that, uh-huh, so, like, I can separate, I can, yeah, like, try to pick apart and, you know, put together. It's like, okay, I know what you're going for here. I know you don't need whatever. But, so, yeah, I've 10 years of 48-hour film,
right,
project. So. Mm-hmm.
They only have 48 hours. There's only so much time to be good at acting.
I know. And this guy only had, what, $3,000?
Right. Yeah. It does look really good for...
Yeah, for what they had to work with.
For what they had to work with. And it being old, I assume there's not really been any restoration done to it. It still looks great.
Where did you watch it?
HBO.
I watched it on Amazon.
No, that was restored by Criterion
at
some point.
Okay.
And actually the Academy Film Archive did some work on it at one point because it's influential.
It looks great.
It's just me stuff. Yeah. You know, I love a spooky abandoned carnival place that you feel mysteriously drawn to and go, and there are ghouls you can't understand there is really all I want in any medium. So
I'm not upset that I watched it. You know, mm-hmm, it's like that was worth my time.
Yeah, no, and it does, like, it puts something new in my repertoire in case I, you know, mm-hmm, throw a party and want to, mm-hmm, create some vibes.
I think you are fully correct that is this movie's best application is background vibes.
The indelible thing is when she's driving and getting darker and sleepier, and then his face is riding along with in the mirror. That's like the image that people go to.
Yeah.
And
that's a good one.
I like it and recommend it. Mostly to David Lynch people.
Yes.
But
one of these days I'm going to rewatch Mulholland Drive.
And do it.
It's great.
And do it about once a year.
It's really good. I love that movie.
I'm embarrassed at how high my number is going to be, so say yours first. Robin?
Let's say 58.
That's very kind of you. Camila?
60.
93.
That's fair. Yeah. I mean,
your jam.
Mm-hmm. 70 and a third.
So I'm the only person who rated my movie out of the 90s.
Yes.
Yes. Which honestly is just because I'm like, no one really needs to see this. Unless you love Jeff Goldblum. Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I, a 70 and a third is the overall. So I'm in third place. And that's fine. It was an idiosyncratic choice. That was released on November 26th, 1962. By the way, we almost perfectly did 15-year gaps.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
62 to 77 to 91.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
The
monkeys.
No.
Yeah, this, I don't understand. This is before the British invasion. What was even happening? Did music exist? Elvis!
Right, yeah.
No, I made a sideways 62. Reference to this act earlier when talking about other stage properties. Things that are...
Oh, Frankie Valli.
Yes.
And the Four Seasons.
Yes.
Credited
to the Four Seasons because it was early enough that...
Big Girls Don't Cry?
Yeah.
Great.
There you go. Yeah. Well, it's been over an hour. Do we, like, lightning round, you can't handle the truth?
Sure.
I don't have my letterbox in front of me.
I'll tell
say,
you your letterbox.
No, I mean, also my letterbox is hopelessly out of date, as it usually is. Oh, I guess I saw Guardians 3.
I did too.
Sean's whole vendetta against that movie definitely helped me enjoy it at all, because I think that going in with sub-basement level expectations, I was like, this is fine.
You're welcome.
Yes.
That's part of my job.
It made me angry.
Guardians did?
Yeah. Are you my joining the crusade?
No, Guardians. Oh. Yeah. Like, it's, yeah. Like, why the fuck, man? Like, why are you doing this? Like,
you're supposed to be the fun one.
Yeah, it's like, I'm looking, like, I had to leave the room several times, but, like, when they're going back to, like, the little experiment.
Yeah.
Guys, it's like, this is fucked up. I don't appreciate this
I'll call
at all.
Batman if I want to be upset. Right. You're here to play 70s jams.
Right. Ugh, Vey. Like, come on. So, yeah, that was my thoughts on Guardians 3. Fuck those.
We're far enough and it's on Plus for long enough. I'll spoil where the movie is clearly going from the minute you introduce those adorable little plot devices.
I had to, like, cover Professor's eyes.
If you roll in a bunch of new characters who are also adorable, helpless animals, so you can kill them later, that's not storytelling. That's just manipulating the audience.
Yeah.
That's just doing a thing that you know will upset people as a shorthand to get them to care about something that you didn't really set up.
Right.
We never gave a shit about Rocket's backstory before.
No. We didn't need it.
No, like, one needs it.
We alluded to it, like, the first or second, and it's like, that was enough. Like, we, all right, man. I get you. You got scars.
Yes.
Yeah. You got some darkness in you. We will work on that together. But, bro, oh, God.
Did you like it a little more than we did then?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I didn't like it, but I watched the entire thing. Like, you know, I wasn't miserable the whole time. I enjoyed Adam Warlock. I thought he was charming.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
it has moments.
Few times. I enjoyed the needle drops. I'm probably going to give it 2 stars on Letterboxd. It was fine.
Oh, yeah, that's about, I gave it like 2. Like, there were a couple of chuckle moments I had, but for the most part, I was not enjoying it.
I dug the Nebula Star-Lord relationship.
Yeah.
And the trying to figure out a car scene was really funny.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Listen, there were things in it that I found amusing enough to get through. I was expecting to not even be able to watch the whole thing.
That was the first F-bomb in the MCU.
Really? Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
And he's like, now you open the fucking door. Like, and that, and they just said, we can get away with this, right? And they're like, well, I think you can.
One.
You get one.
It's but PG-13. Not as a verb.
Exactly. Not as a verb.
RDJ right there.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Did you, anything else, Robin?
Oh, I wanted to say I started watching old TV movies on Tubi and other streaming services, and I highly recommend this as a form of self-care.
Are these the made-for-TV movies on Tubi?
Yes.
Well, we did the Elijah Wood one that one time. It was great. Right.
And I watched another one with Christine Lottie called The Pilot's Wife, based on an official Oprah's Book Club selection, and with John Hurd, and I loved every minute of it. Like, they're so inconsequential, but it's the perfect. I know that in the industry, they've started calling this second screen movies, where it's like movies to have on while you're scrolling through your phone. And, like, that's probably bad for society.
Yeah.
And yet we all kind of have that need, don't we? I mean, so I'm going to recommend that to everyone.
Is
it complete with commercial breaks?
Actually, this was on Prime, so it didn't have commercial breaks. Mm. And one of the things I found notable about it was how infrequently there were obvious commercial breaks.
Huh.
I recommend The Calendar Girl Murders with a very young Sharon Stone and Tom Skerritt, because it's always Tom Skerritt.
It's always awesome. I feel like I've seen that.
It's fun.
Calendar Girl Murders.
That's, you know, it's a TV movie because when they get to the end, they do the credits just over a still frame of Sharon Stone with the theme song play. Camille?
The other thing I saw, I went to see Last Voyage of the Demeter.
As did I.
Dracula's on a boat?
Yep. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm on a boat, bitch.
How is it?
It was a little too long.
Okay.
I feel like they tried to make us care too much about the sailor's relationship with the boat.
It is literally Dracula, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And there was also a forced, like, romance, almost, you know.
I'm raising an eyebrow.
Yeah. Like,
it's less a romance and more a character is softened by the presence of a young lady. But, like, they don't make out.
No. But it's like, know. I mean, they kind of, like, at the end.
They
them drawing. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, yes. And I don't know. It had, like, some really great cinematography. There was some, I love a lot of, like, the boat is in peril, like the scenes of the boat being tossed in the sea. Like, that was great. And I do like the whole feeling and the vibes of, you know, okay, we've got this creature on this boat. Like, we're on this, we have nowhere to go. We've got to fight it. We got to do whatever. I appreciate going back to basics about Dracula and not making this vampire sexy or even human. So, you know, we just go back to basics of, like, what a creature is, this creature feature. But again, I think they were trying to do a little bit more, like, the story that they were telling. It's like, just keep it creepy. Like, let's snatch out, like, 25 minutes and let's just keep it creepy.
Yeah.
And I also kind of feel like the ending was alluding to like, oh, we want a franchise. And I'm like,
the pitch for this is in the book and right. it's always skipped over in the movies.
Right.
But the part in the book is awesome. It switches to newspaper reports where they're like, so a boat floated into shore with no one on board except for the captain dead tied right. to the wheel. Let's figure out what happened there, and then goes through the captain's log. That's great. It should have been, you know, pretty direct. They start with the, you know, flash forward to the ending and then go back. It's like, well, then the stakes are low. We know this doesn't right. work out. But just go straight from the beginning to the end in like 85 yeah. minutes
yeah.
rather than like trying to, you know. But that said, I liked it because it's creepy, it's spooky, and you don't have that many boat movies. Like, that's mostly what I was right. thinking. Was there. I was like, I don't know, like, other than the Pirates of the Caribbean,
ghost ship,
but like on a then sea. Boat, an old-timey boat.
Oh.
Well, yeah, and that's yeah. what really hooked me to even want to go see yeah. it. Well, aside from the fact that like, this is the start, that's that part about where Dracula mm-hmm. came over here, like, what happened on that fucking boat? Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, again, like, I felt like that was it's a great set
yeah.
for what is happening.
How about Mutiny on the Bounty?
I should
like
watch. I should watch some of those.
Yes. The one that won Best Picture is actually really good.
Two actors to call out. I thought Corey Hawkins was really good.
He was fantastic.
He's good in everything.
Right?
Yeah.
He, like, didn't we watch a movie where he had two lines of dialogue and we were like, good job, Corey Hawkins.
So. Yeah.
It was Iron Man 3 is the one you're looking
yep.
for. Yeah. I don't know if you can be underrated when you're in 1,000 giant movies, but David Dasmalchian.
The captain?
No, the first mate.
Right?
That guy, like, who looks like a vampire?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, who is in Dark Knight? Who is in Dune?
Everything.
Who is in Oppenheimer? Who's in Suicide Squad and Ant-Man and the Wasp and the
Ant-Man.
Other Ant-Man?
Well, this
and,
is probably like what closest to like him actually being like a star of a movie.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I couldn't pitch. I knew him from like 1,000 things, but I had no idea his name or.
So
you know,
he
what.
Does not play Dracula.
No.
No, okay.
He's the first mate of the ship.
He's
he
great.
He seems like a vampire. Like, complimentary.
Right, yeah. right. No, I liked it. It got really bad reviews, and I'm like, this isn't fair.
It's
like,
not that bad.
I'm surprised.
I don't think anyone who has seen it has gone like, this is one of my favorite. Everyone's like, oh, it's a good time.
Yeah, but every like, tweet or Blue Sky yeah. post I've seen about it has been like, that was pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, like, I enjoyed myself. I don't regret seeing it. I just think that it could have been tightened up a little bit. There were some things that were unnecessary.
Anything else?
Nope.
Very briefly, Meg 2 is awful.
Yeah.
I don't know how you screw that
Surprise!
Up.
Did you enjoy the first one?
Not particularly. Like, not a lot, but like enough that I walked in like, okay, more shark fun.
Yeah.
Whatnot.
I rewatched Deep Blue Sea last week.
Probably better.
It holds up incredibly if you are willing to just kind of blur your eyes whenever there's CGI.
Right, yeah. right. I assume that's the case with Anaconda as well. No, too much of it is away from the shark. And when there is the shark, it's nothing. It's, yes, the CGI is nominally more convincing, but it's like, people splash, no more people, and there's a shark there. It's not like
they should have gone with a giant squid.
Well, one shows up.
Okay.
And that brought it from like a 1 star to a 1.5 was
go.
The presence of the squid. Also bad is the Gal Gadot Netflix movie, Heart of Stone. Not Figured. Terrible, but every Netflix action movie is like, why would I care about this?
I yeah. want to like her much more than I actually do.
You don't need to like her. Remember when she did that Imagine video?
Oh, that's right.
This is when I realized, though, part of why part of why she's such a good Wonder Woman is because she doesn't she looks like a god. She looks like an ethereal, you know, alien that came down. And so when you're like, she's just trying to blend in at the bar, it's like, no, you're Wonder Woman. And that's kind of it for you.
Right. Yeah. It's like, we should have done. You should have been doing this like 10, 15 years ago. We can't go back now.
I like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Did anybody see Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
No. And I'll tell you, Colin and I were like trying to decide what we were going to do one night. And he was like, we could go to the movies. Mm-hmm. We look at what's up, and like, clearly the best movie for us to see that weekend was Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. And I was like, honestly, after Barbie, I can't do boy movie.
Well, you should have done Barbenheimer, and then it flushes it right out. But you did. It was just several days later.
Yes.
You see, now they're trying to make that a thing, and like, Saw 10 is coming out and Paw Patrol on the same day, and they're like, Saw Patrol.
Saw Patrol.
I'll allow it.
No!
What order do you do those in? The Paw Patrol becomes like the eye bleach.
Yeah.
We've done two of them. I think this is the best Turtles movie. Like, I like the one from 1990, but it's clearly a weird mess.
Yeah.
This is the most, and I think I still went like 7 out of 10, but it's the closest to like nailing it, and okay. It's funny and enjoyable.
The trailer was good. Cute. I'm sure I'll enjoy it whenever I watch it.
And the villain is a giant fly named Superfly, played by Ice Cube.
Oh what? My God.
So we're done.
Oh my God.
We're done.
Ice Cube.
There's an improv warm-up called Five Shay. Things, and somebody gave someone, name five movies that Ice Cube didn't make.
Titanic.
And it was like, oh, but he will make any, he'll be in any movie. He likes to work.
Yeah. The last thing I will say, this is mainly for Robin. Last night, I watched The War of the Worlds from 1953.
Okay.
Which is pretty good. It's way scarier and way more intense than you are anticipating a 50s sci-fi movie to mm-hmm. be. And part of that is, in the middle, they go, we don't have any ability to destroy them with conventional weapons. We've waited long enough. We have to nuke them. And then they try to nuke them, and there's a scene where they're waiting for the smoke to clear, and they lose their shit because the nukes didn't affect them at all. And I didn't know Independence Day stole that whole sequence.
Like, why was that for me specifically?
Because
I'm from New Jersey?
Because you're the Independence Day stan.
Am I?
Yes.
Okay, I love that movie.
Part of your thing. I've seen you make the speech. It's a really good movie. If you like 50 sci-fi, I recommend it. But Independence Day. Who knew that it was influenced heavily by previous alien invasion movies?
Or arguably when we actually used a nuclear bomb on humans.
Weird in the wake of Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
Like and one of them says to the other scientist, I haven't seen you since, what's the name of the place? Oak Ridge?
That sounds right.
Yeah. I was like, I know what that is now because of that other movie.
Shh.
I will say, as we get back to our normal format, I hope we do another Little Treat Film Festival.
Yeah, I'd love to.
Because it was fun. I saw two things that I probably wouldn't have, you know, landed on otherwise.
True story.
And, you know, it was a little peek into both of your
brains.
Yes.
Your brain movie collections. But now we hand it back to Tony Goldwyn and the Hands of Fate. Have we done James Bond?
No.
Yeah,
we did
GoldenEye. Oh,
yes.
Well, we're going back far, but not too much farther than that. To Moonraker.
That's one of the Roger Moore ones.
It's the one with the moon.
Yeah, the moon's in
and
it.
Somebody raking it.
I think the guy who played the bad guy in that is one of the celebrities I've encountered in real life.
I feel like this is the one that made people go, okay, this is yes. You're stretching it a little bit.
All right, Moonraker. Yeah,
Roger Moore.
Yeah, sure. I never know how I feel about James Bond. Every now and then I'm like, I should buy one of those 73 movie sets just to start going.
There's only like 20 of them.
That's
25.
All.
The okay. last Craig one was 25.
Okay.
Daniel Craig Casino Royale is kind of one of my favorite movies. It's certainly one of my favorite movies of that decade.
Okay.
But most of the time that I watch another one, I start out like fun, and then an hour later I'm like, this is more of a small bites thing, and you're only giving me big bites.
This is James Bond in space.
Mm-hmm. I think we're going to have fun with
this. Oh, we'll have fun with it. I don't know if I've seen a Roger Moore one. I saw a lot. The girl I dated when I was 13 years old was really into James Bond. And because there's very little for you to do on a date at 13, I saw a lot of them then. I don't think I saw this one.
We used to watch. They used to do like Christmas Day marathons on Spike TV.
That sounds right.
And my grandmother, who was a very straight-laced lady, weirdly loved James Bond movies. And so we would always watch it on Christmas. So I've probably seen this, but I don't remember it.
I have a nice pile of the novels, like in a 70s printing with like very like paisley shades to them. Like I have five or six of them sitting on my desk that were in my grandmother's basement for decades. And so, you know, when I was getting cleaned out, I was like, oh, I'm going to get these and put them here. And I'm not actually going to read or open them because they're probably going to be wildly offensive.
Yeah.
Let's just make this. This is decor now.
Yes. That's how we end an episode when we don't have trivia.
Yeah. Little treat.